Folks, at 7 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, actually Saturday night, where I am, it's dark, we've been that way for hours, and we're in Studio B of Stately Hope Manor, and I'm not Stacy McCain playing host, because Stacy is in quarantine. One of the things that happened when he went to visit his son's wedding was that they changed the rules here in Maryland, and by the time he got back, Stacy's in quarantine for a while. So we're hoping that he will join us later. We're getting him set up to come in the same way Diana usually does, and I hear her in the background.
Here I am. Stacy wrote a brief note to let us know that he is a poor, unfrozen caveman journalist, and he cannot make the app work. So we get to take care of his, I promised him we'd take care of it.
Okay. All right. So basically it's been a rough, insane week. I don't know about, the rest of you, but, 2020 has been a really rough time for my hometown. I'm from Nashville. And yesterday was especially ugly. That bombing that occurred happened in the neighborhood where I used to work most of the jobs that I had when I was in broadcasting back in Nashville. WMAK's studios were around the corner on Church Street and a half a block up. And WLAC AM and FM was another block up Church Street. So, you know, that's kind of a neighborhood I'm used to. And second was mostly warehouses and rundown stuff left over from when Nashville was more of a river port than anything else. Mm-hmm. The area has been revitalized over the last 50, 60 years. It's just been an amazing turnaround of gentrification.
Yeah, so it's changed quite a lot, evidently.
Oh, it has. The one thing that hasn't changed about the neighborhood is the block between 2nd and 3rd, okay, running east-west, and Church Street and Commerce Street running north-south. That block has had a telephone company specifically AT&T or the operating company back when I was a kid, Southern Bell. That's where they built the first dial telephone exchange in Tennessee. It was the, well, when I was a kid, the Congress 4 exchange and then the 244 exchange. It was actually one of the last rotary dial exchanges pulled out. It stayed in service over 50 years. And I think part of that had to do with the fact they were just trying to see how long it would take to break it. And then finally got to the point where the customers were demanding touch tone phones.
You know, so, I honestly think we may have to explain about Congress, Richmond, all of these various exchanges, because anybody under, God, my age of about 50, somewhere in their 50s, isn't going to know what you're talking about. And okay, I'm not entirely clear. The only reason I remember is because my grandma watched Dialing for Dollars, and it was always Richmond 9 something, something, something.
Right. Well, basically what happened was the first dial telephone exchanges were four-number exchanges, and then when you got a town that had more than 9,000 or so telephones, you wound up having to have another exchange. And so they became five-digit exchanges. Mm-hmm. When we first got a phone that was a dial phone, our phone number was 24226. Mm-hmm. And Nashville got by with, in up until about 1950 or 51, got by with five-digit phone numbers. Mm-hmm. Then they didn't have enough phone numbers to go around, so our phone number became Cypress 24226, and that was CY 24226. And that's the letters on the dial had to do with the first two letters of something had to do with what your exchange was. So it might be Richmond or Butterfield or whatever. And
that's Butterfield 9, which is the movie with Elizabeth Taylor.
It's an exchange in New York City.
Yeah.
Lincoln 5 exchange, was the White House and the executive office building. Mm-hmm. So I had Cypress 24226, and then we went to digit dialing, and then it became 2924226. And then we went to, you got to dial the area code 2, and it became 615-292-4226.
So now the younger crowd may have some vague idea of what we're talking about.
Right, but the switching equipment was in a building on that block, and AT&T has had infrastructure on that block. When I was a kid, AT&T had long lines on top of that building that had the switching equipment for several of the downtown exchanges. Also grew those microwave towers that we used to see around the country until everything got replaced with satellite and fiber. And so that area of town has always been a switching node for not only for that local exchange, but for AT&T long lines. So the fact that as part of the redevelopment of the area and the buildup of AT&T's long distance and internet infrastructure, that they chose that site in Nashville, where they already owned a whole block, essentially. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised that facility is there. Mm-hmm. And the question, though, gets to be, and we're at the crazy people are dangerous part of the show first, folks.
Unusually early, but yes. Yeah,
but this got to be the craziest and most dangerous thing done all week.
I wanted to let you know, Stacy published just before we went on the air, I think, an article called Person of Interest. It's very brief. Let me read it. Everybody is now reporting, although police have not yet officially confirmed, that Anthony Quinn Warner, 63, has been identified as a person of interest in Friday's Nashville explosion. ATF and FBI agents are reportedly searching Warner's home in the Nashville suburb of Antioch, Tennessee. He reportedly gave away his home to a woman last month, and at least to me, Stacy speaking, this would seem to suggest that Warner, who was unmarried and had no children, was in a state of suicidal despair. So my guess would be that Warner blew himself up in the explosion, and the real mystery is why he apparently targeted the AT&T building. Now, I was saying to my husband earlier today, the really horrid thing is this is going to turn out to be a disgruntled employee. Or somebody who has, I despise working with AT&T myself, but has somehow or other decided that something about AT&T explains his sad life.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've been digging into this guy's background. First of all, the FBI, had a spokesman out in front of the guy's house talking to the press saying, we are going through the guy's house to check on some stuff. And no one's been arrested yet. There's some
kind
interesting
of hard
things.
to arrest his corpse, especially
Well,
one
that
a little
could be the
tiny
reason.
bit.
Well, on the other hand, it could be that this was a multi-person thing, and that he may have provided the van and some other stuff. But some interesting stuff has also come out about him. He apparently owns his own small business, which is an alarm company. He's lived quietly in the neighborhood for over 20 years, according to the neighbors. And at one point, he had an explosive handler's license.
Oh dear.
Now,
Well,
that could mean lots of things, including the fact that he might have had a part-time job in the fireworks business. You need, right? No, I mean,
no, I'm giggling because of what that
Stacy,
sort of,
yes. The next, well, Stacy puts on a wonderful 4th of July show for us up here. Actually, not up here because it wouldn't be legal in where I am in Maryland, but in a undisclosed location of space where
Undisclosed.
it's not too far away and legal. He puts on a wonderful show for us. Now, the level of fireworks Stacy uses are impressive, but they are not the sort of things that you use for community fireworks display. And you really do need an explosive handler's license to deal with some of that stuff. So, I mean, if he were had a part-time job, shooting fireworks someplace, or I mean, so there's all sorts of things. It's completely bizarre. The idea that he took his house and quit claim it to a woman in California who apparently, didn't know he'd done it. No real connection to that I've been able to come up with. So, like I said, crazy people are dangerous.
Please tell me we're not going to get into another of this Las Vegas, like the Las Vegas shooter guy who's just so weird. I can't even wrap my head around it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had a post up called Cui Bono, which is Latin for who gets the benefit.
Yes. Who
And,
benefits?
you know, given the warning to evacuate, it's clear that whoever did this, wasn't trying to cause a loss of life, except maybe his own. And just talking to basically damage property. Well, what, the only thing of really substantial value there, unless he had a grudge against a customer, maybe who, if Warner's the guy, who had a business in the area or something like that. I mean, AT&T is the obvious target. And, I've seen all sorts of scenarios that involved everything from disgruntled employees to state actors taking out that. Let me just say that AT&T does a lot of cooperating with the federal government and law enforcement and intelligence agencies. And some very interesting things have been known to happen at various switching nodes. And so I have no idea of the kind of operations that might have gone on that block since roughly 1968 or 9. But I can imagine that, I can imagine why somebody might get the idea that, things were going on there and have a grudge. So,
Well, that's the trouble is crazy is really crazy makes okay. Do you remember there's a phrase, logic is just a way of going wrong with confidence. With
Right.
crazy,
Well, high intelligence is the way of doing it very quickly as well.
yeah, tell me about it. Oh boy. The
Well, a
joys
high
of
IQ
jumping.
actually deals with processing speed, and it just high IQ people can solve can work through things quickly, which means they can logically come to the wrong answer faster than you can.
Very, very fast, yes. And then it gets exciting. But the whole thing is that this guy, we won't know for a while yet, and we may never actually know unless he's left, the piles of paper, the Ted Kaczynski. How and this guy put more stuff into a 40-foot shack than I can fit, than I can imagine fitting into a 2,800 square foot house. But we may never understand him at all. Assuming he's the bits of tissue they found.
Yeah, well, as Stacy is wont to remind us, crazy people are dangerous.
Are dangerous.
Anyway, you know, I've still, even though we have a sort of kind of suspect, I've seen lots of speculation about who done it and motives. Mm-hmm. And like I noticed, some of them are even more far-fetched than what I was able to imagine. I'm trying to remain optimistic about the future, but are you pondering what I'm pondering, pinky things that appeared mm-hmm. last Monday went, I think so, brain, but what might happen when 2020 turns 21 and starts drinking.
Yeah. Actually, I've been saying to Rod, you know, nobody is to say a single thing about how it can't get worse, because I can just see 2021 turning to 2020 and saying, here, honey, hold my beer.
Yeah. But, you know, part of the problem is, in terms of solving the problems as a society, is that basically we're not able to talk to each other anymore. Nope. There's a post I did that was started off with a quote from a piece that Newt Gingrich had in the Washington Times. We live in alternate worlds. And Gingrich was trying to write a post explaining the difficulty he had talking with a liberal friend, explaining why Gingrich was not going to accept Biden's election as legitimate. And Biden wrote, the challenge is that I and other conservatives are not disagreeing with the left within a commonly understood world. Right. We live in alternative worlds. And, you know, I read that and I got to thinking about an exchange I'd had with David French over the weekend. Mm-hmm. David has a email letter thing that comes out called French Press. And he was talking about how too many people, particularly evangelical Christians, may be mixing up their religion with their politics in ways that aren't healthy for either. And I wrote,
stop preaching. I'm sorry. Any old time. He infuriates me. He makes such broad assumptions about what people believe as if he understands other people's religious faith.
I think he is arguing, from his point of view in a fairly sheltered environment. But I wrote to him, I wonder if it's not the case that the Christian worldview that holds that there's an objective standard of truth and that each of us is personally accountable for our actions leads to some of the differences in opinion that the data that he was showing in his post had to do with who believes what. Yeah. That's not to say that evangelical Christians always reason correctly from the teachings of the Bible, but that the place we start from is so disconnected from the Marxist, neo-Marxist, postmodern thought that we aren't in the same conversation as those who hate us. We're talking at each other rather than to each other, giving different answers because we understand the questions differently. Because mm-hmm. You know, we can engage with our political opponents or the opponent in any sort of argument logically, right?
And we've got to believe the same rules of logic, though. And lately, it's all about the feels on their side.
Well, but if we can't engage logically, and if the other side insists on making everything a power contest, then we've got two choices. We either get up from the table and leave the game, or we have to beat them at their own game. And I don't particularly like either idea.
Neither concept is very appealing. No, they are still our fellow citizens. It's just they seem to have walked off into a world that you're right, it's an alternate universe. I feel like the thing everybody says about we're just living in Heinlein's crazy years. I don't want to be in Heinlein's crazy years.
Right. Well, a lot of the other thing that hit me that I wrote about in that post, though, was a piece from American Thinker that Carol Brown put up. And it basically catalogs all the misdeeds you can think of for the last few years from the left and forecasts even worse behavior. And it ends up with a call to active resistance. And, you know, it goes on, who's willing to put it all on the line to save the nation? Who among us is willing to go to jail? Who's willing to be injured or killed? Should we attend a protest or engage in civil disobedience and find ourselves attacked without police protection? Who's willing to travel to Washington, D.C. on January 6th to attend what could be a historic protest scheduled the same day as the joint session of Congress meets to make the Electoral College votes official? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that led me to wonder that they're calling that event the Million MAGA March. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way, you know, depending on how many beers 2021 has had at that point, I could see that turning into something akin to what happened in 2013, 2014 in the Euromaidan demonstrations mm-hmm. in Kiev, which were about a crooked election.
Yep.
And the incident at the Oregon State Capitol this week, you know, shows that there's mm-hmm. some people on the right already losing their patience with the system that they think is going to treat them unfairly. You know, I'm starting to believe that 2021 is going to be uglier. The thing that could turn out to work, though, mm-hmm. is basically a lot of this power difference thing on the left has to do with viewing the world and with the idea that wishing will make it better.
Yeah.
And it's not unlike reasoning with leftists is not unlike reasoning with a 4 or 5 year old.
Yeah. But now, that's not fair.
Or it's not what I want.
Right.
Right. And so yes, I know, but there's this thing called the real world. Mm-hmm. And if we can there is an intellectual moral tension that has to be going on with someone who takes this kind of it's all about power approach. You can't live your life that way.
Nope.
It doesn't matter how much you want. If you step off the roof, you're going to fall down and hurt yep. yourself. And people have to live their lives knowing that. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right. Well, it's not just that. You can't always trust your cape, to go by a song I always liked.
Well, right. You know, if their actions have enough consequences to cause enough of them to start questioning their worldview, and I'm beginning to see that to happen with some more thoughtful people, we got a chance. You know, we might be able to turn things around without having to get too bloody.
Well, Stacey used, Stacey springboarded off of Die Hard as a Christmas movie. And he's right, by the way, it is a Christmas movie. But he
jumped.
He used that as a hop off point to talk about the cultural phenomenon of the German autumn, a particularly horrible and bloody short period, fortunately short. But the fact is that the people who made up the various organizations, the Red Army faction and a few of the others, who created the circumstances of the German autumn, how did the writer of Hitler's Children put it? I don't have the book in front of me this instant. That these people did, well, one of the last things they said was that they were complicated They were angry. They were insulated from all their lives. They'd been insulated from all consequences. And in the end, they were cruel and incoherent, and they did nobody any good. And I fear that looking at Antifa and BLM, using what Stacey has written here, I honestly see this as very much what we're looking at. We're seeing they're full of incoherent, inchoate rage. They don't actually have, they can't even articulate what they're angry about. When they scream about fascism and Nazis and white supremacists from their and white privilege, they don't, they're using cant. They're not actually, there's no real thought behind it. If you back them into a corner and begin to gently ask them, exactly what do you mean by that, dear? How is that? What defines this? How do we spot these people? They don't really have an answer, and they fall back on all cops are bastards, which doesn't work.
Well, I mean, one of the things that absolutely infuriates them is to require them to logically present their evidence for what they're believing, which point you'll be told that logic is a white supremacist thing used to overpower them. Well, no, they're not being overpowered by the person questioning them. They're being underpowered by their poor view of the world.
They have been very, very poorly educated. They have been indoctrinated and credentialed without receiving the tools to be able to think. I mean, do they even know about Socrates? The unexamined life is not worth living. They don't know how to examine themselves. And I think that that's essentially where Stacey was going with this rather long, complicated discussion about a book that got turned into a movie that the director insists is anti-capitalist, that everybody loves because it's a great little adventure flick and is a Christmas movie. And drawing to the German Autumn thing and then going to our modern dilemma.
Well, yeah, I mean, but a lot of this has to do with the idea that you bring up Socrates. I wonder what percentage of these people, most of whom have some sort of, I'll call, liberal arts, using the term very loosely, degree, managed to get a degree without taking a course in the history of Western civilization. Western Civ used to be a required course.
It probably still is. The question is, what's being taught?
Well, actually, I saw some survey information now that something like the top 50 schools, only 30 of them offered a course in Western Civ at the undergraduate level, and fewer than a dozen had it as a requirement, although you could use it as a if it was offered, you could use it as one of the requirements, but it wasn't a requirement per se. And that's kind of scary.
Wait, even at rather miserable little school, they had us take Western Civ 1, Western Civ 2, different courses, and American History 1 and American History 2.
Yeah, and how long ago was that?
Oh, gosh, has it really been that long?
Before the turn of the century?
Yeah, it was. 87 was my last year.
So there you go. You know, I went to a school where basically in order to get an engineering degree, we still had to get the requirements for a BA down. So it's like, I just don't understand the disconnection with reality here.
Well, it's worse than that. They've cut young people off from essentially the distilled wisdom of a very large portion of the human race in an effort to try to pretend that it's, oh, no, you can ignore those old dead white males. The only thing that matters is this woke stuff. I really think that's criminal.
Well, you know, I think what we've got going, the other thing that some of these children need to be chastised for is their just blatant cultural appropriation. Most of them use telephones.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I checked, Alexander Graham Bell was a white guy from the British Isles. Mm-hmm. You see where this is going?
I do.
You know, most of them want to ride on airplanes. Orville and Wilbur Wright, never mind. You see where I'm going?
Yes.
On the other hand, I would happily take a blood transfusion, and that technology was developed by a black doctor. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
trained in the Western methodologies.
That's
race
true.
Race in the end should be irrelevant. The fact that we're sliding back into making it the only thing that matters when we look at a person is criminal. I think this is a bad thing to do to everybody.
Well, you know, the thing that struck me about Stacy's post,
mm-hmm,
about Die Hard was the idea that one of the ways it was going to be an anti-capitalist movie was by having the limo driver
driver. Yeah.
Talking about I've never ridden in a limo, and that's supposed to make it like working class. Apparently his kids never went to the prom.
Evidently.
You know?
No, I am a firm believer in limos. If you are going to go out for dinner and a show and you do not want to worry about it, hire a car, hire a limo, have somebody else drive you. It works beautifully.
Take a cab or Uber or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly.
Yeah, but that's not your driver who is there for you.
Yeah, but it's still better than me with the car keys after. Well, never mind.
Okay.
But you know, Stacy started writing about Die Hard and meandered off into the Battermeinhof gang, and then wound up talking about conspicuous consumption.
Mm-hmm. And stupid conspicuous consumption. Hey, I just stole 88,000. I worry about people.
I don't worry about that. I mean, that's just natural selection and operation,
I guess.
But the other thing, though, is that Stacy then managed to give us our lead into the midpoint of the show,
mm-hmm,
because he said, went on about an extended digression into the ostentation display of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And if I wasn't such a hopeless failure as a writer, I might offer some kind of logical conclusion here. But instead, all I can do is wish you a Merry Christmas. By the way, Happy New Year to everybody.
Indeed.
And remind you of the five most important words in the English language, which are...
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please. But when for one thing, Stacy can use it to enjoy his... time in quarantine, mm-hmm, he can send out for a pizza if you hit the his tip jar, that wonderful bright yellow button, mm-hmm, that you'll find all over theothermccain.com, where Stacy blogs. On the other hand, if you'd like to support hogwash.com, my blog, you can go look in the sidebar over on the right and click on the icon of a tip jar and be taken off to PayPal land, and you can help support Hogwash that way as well. Or you can go down to the Hogwash store link and buy all sorts of interesting gifts. You're a little late to get stocking stuffers for this year's, but there's great stuff there that you can spend your hard-earned cash on and help support the blog. Or both blogs and lots of other blogs around the internet, by the way, mm-hmm. participate in the Amazon Affiliates program. And when you support a blogger by using one of those links, that blog earns a small commission. Doesn't affect the price you pay, but it does help support the blog. So once again, to remind you all, the five most important words
in the English language are hit the freaking tip jar.
And we will be thankful for your support. It also helps support this podcast, by the way. The election has been more or less settled in more or less of the races. But of course, one of the unsettled races is the race for vice president. But if Kamala Harris decides that she's not going to try to hold both positions at once, senator and vice president, then Governor Hairgel of California is supposed to appoint the successor to fill out the remainder of her term. And apparently he's selected Alex Padilla, who is the Secretary of State.
The man is insanely stupid and clumsy and corrupt.
Sounds like an ideal California politician to me.
Well, you know, Leland Yee, who was this great anti-gun crusader, got popped for, gun running. So, you know, nothing surprises us.
Yeah, well, I mean... My post about Padilla was mm-hmm. nothing to see here. Move along. Yeah. Well, see, he is most recently in the news before this potential appointment as having made a $35 million state contract to a Biden-linked consulting firm. And it was a no-bid contract that was part of a, I mean, put this in scare quotes, voter outreach program. Padilla was running as California Secretary of State. And there's been a big tug of war back and forth about getting the contract paid because the mm-hmm. state's chief financial officer says, mm-hmm. yeah, but you didn't have the authority to let that contract.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been going back and forth unsuccessfully for Padilla so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But meanwhile, Harris has not resigned from the Senate, even though allowing her replacement to be appointed during this section of Congress would give him seniority over the new elected senators joining in January. Wonder why if this you, is. Hmm?
One, if you think that Harris actually even vaguely understands that, I'm sorry. Have you listened to this woman?
Did you see her tweet this afternoon?
I'm not on Twitter, and I was also neck deep in some other stuff. So, I don't know. What did she say this time?
Okay. It's her tweet. Our Kwanzaa celebrations are one of my favorite childhood memories. The whole family would gather around across multiple generations and we tell stories and light candles, whether you're celebrating this year with those you live with or over Zoom, happy Kwanzaa. Now, let me get this. I tweeted, I don't believe you.
No.
And let me explain why. You see, she was raised by her Indian, as in South Asia, her Indian mother in Canada. And her grandparents were in India and Jamaica.
Yeah, I don't.
So where's this? I mean, and she didn't have any children. So where's this multi-generational thing coming from? Now, I mean, there are crazies in Canada who celebrate Kwanzaa, but
it's not a really big FBI. But okay.
but it's really not that big a deal with most Indian families.
Mm-mm. No.
You know, it's like hello testing.
Well, she always is telling silly, stupid lies, claiming to have been listening to a certain rapper when in college, when obviously that wasn't possible.
But she, at least she admitted to smoking dope while she was doing it, after having locked up a whole bunch of folks for being dope smokers.
Yeah, I know. The hypocrisy is astonishing. But no, it's just she tells dumb lies, lies that are obviously untrue and just don't fit in time and space. And she seems to have no more awareness of it than does Joe Biden, who tells weird and stupid lies. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll get to Biden in a little while. Meanwhile, I want to pick on you some more since you're in Georgia. Do you want to do Stacey's thing about Reverend Warnock?
Can we not call him Reverend? There's something about that that just sets my teeth on edge. Anyway, yeah, I know he's been in the pulpit and I know he's ordained and I know all that, but he bothers me. Yes, I am perfectly happy. I'm about to read. Okay. Raphael Warnock didn't do nothing. Now, Stacy says, it is arguably racist to invoke the didn't do nothing meme here, but because Raphael Warnock is a Democrat running for Senate, any criticism of him is therefore automatically racist, so it doesn't matter. It's probably just a matter of time until we are told Warnock could not possibly have abused his ex-wife because he was an honor student. However, the ex-wife told police, Ulea Nadoya, told police in March that Warnock ran over her foot while the couple were having a dispute over whether their children would be allowed to travel to her grandfather's funeral in West Africa. Warnock had refused to sign for passports. I'm going to skip the quotes. You can look from the lady. You can look them up. The question is not whether Warnock did or did not run over his wife's foot, but rather if this video, it's body cam footage from the police involved, will have any effect on the outcome of the two runoff elections in Georgia. Polls show both races, Warnock against Kelly Loeffler and Democrat Joel Ossoff against Senator David Perdue, are neck and neck. It seems astonishing to me that these races are so close, but then again, I still can't believe Georgia was close enough for George Biden to steal it. So what do I know? Perhaps the demographics of Georgia have changed so drastically, and/or Democrats have gotten so proficient at election fraud that my native state has now gone irretrievably blue. On the other hand, maybe November was a fluke, and Georgians will repudiate Democrats in January. Either way, don't blame me. I didn't do nothing.
Yeah. Well, how does it look from your vantage in this about as far south in the state as you can go?
Without falling over the border and landing in Florida?
Yeah.
I don't know. Signs are running neck and neck. Passions are very high. I have overheard conversations and I've participated in conversations in which people have said very, very bluntly, they stole the presidential election while we were watching. Let's not let that happen again. There seems to be a surprising passion to put Ossoff and Warnock in office, which I don't understand. Neither man is impressive if you start really digging into them. But okay, but there seems to be a feeling that there just seems to be a lot of heat here, even here. And I have no idea what to say. I mean, I would not say that Perdue and Loeffler are people that are deeply beloved by Republicans. They're not. But there's a definite crawl over broken glass vibe going on here. The other thing is, and this is interesting to me, you know, I don't watch TV. Okay. We stream things we want to watch. And of course, we are interrupted by ads because we are cheapskates. And I would say that the Republican ads, there are a lot of them, but they're really, really clumsy. They're trying to say Warnock is too radical for Georgia, that they use a clip from Ossoff that is ambiguous. It doesn't seem clear to me as a thing to condemn him for. The ads are bad. They need to step up their game. The best ad I've seen so far is the one that replied, that was a reply to an Ossoff attack ad against Perdue. That is the best ad I've seen so far because it's clear, logical, backed up. All of this stuff about Warnock too radical. How does that mean anything? That doesn't mean anything. The ads are bad. They're not going to change anybody's mind with the current crop of ads. They've got to do something better, and they got to do it soon. Because across the street from me, across the street from my house, there's a small business complex, very small, by the way, maybe three offices. And one of them is being used as an early voting station. And trust me, I would not vote there. It is wildly insecure. There are posters for Ossoff and Warnock right there where you're voting, which makes me say, oh yeah, right, my vote, my ballot's secure. Uh-huh. Seriously, they got to get this move. If they want to change people's minds, they got to move now. Anyway, that's where I am.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Of course, once again, if the same sort of algorithm was running, that was swapping votes, it may have been that the race shouldn't have gone to a runoff.
Perdue should have won straight out, but go on.
Yeah. So, I mean, so what we're saying is, what I'm saying is that there may be, it may be too dangerous for them to cheat at the level they did last time. So we'll see what's going to happen. Meanwhile, the reason that's important is because if the Democrats get both of those seats, then it's a 50-50 Senate. And if Harris is VP, then they control the Senate, they control the House, they control the presidency.
And we're doomed.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting. I'm regardless whether it's Biden or Harris there, I mean, I'm expecting incompetence in the White House. And Joe Biden has a history of plagiarism. And that's actually what's frightening me about this whole thing, because I see stuff on the interwebs about his administration being Obama's third term. But what if Biden impersonates a different president? How about Carter's second term?
Oh.
Or what was really scary, Buchanan's second term. Now, for those of you who didn't take American history, James Buchanan was the Democrat who was elected to president in 1856, succeeded in office by Abraham Lincoln. Buchanan did not have a very successful administration.
To say that he essentially is, his inability to do anything effective probably guaranteed the Civil War was coming is a good way to put it.
Well, actually, he was moderately effective in foreign policy in places like China and Latin America. But other than that, yeah, he screwed up Kansas so bad.
Bleeding Kansas, yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing that frightens me is that we get that. Stacy, on the other hand, expects that they're going to screw up big time, but advises us to be patient.
That was a really good one, by the way. Hang on while I scroll to it. I've been skipping back and forth to make sure I'm keeping up with both tales. All right. Oops.
Okay.
All right. And here we are. Be patient. He posted this on December 21st. How long will it take for the Biden-Harris administration to become a catastrophe of historical proportions, such a flaming dung pile of disaster that even Democrats are horrified by the result? Perhaps quite quickly, but it may take several months for the enormity of the massive political failure to become apparent. As conservatives, we ought not grow impatient. Don't try to create trouble, but rather let this fraudulence proceed to its inevitable collapse and then be prepared to say, see, we told you it wouldn't work. Joe Biden has obtained the presidency under terms that guarantee failure. Insofar as he attempts to appease his party's radical base, Biden will alienate the middle class and wreck the economy. If, on the other hand, Biden tries to perform a high wire balancing act to placate his corporate sponsors. I'm sorry, where was I? I'm sorry, I'm blind here. Tries to perform a high wire balancing act to placate his corporate sponsors with more moderate policies, while still, of course, making progressive gestures for the sake of the party base. The radicals are not so stupid that they won't see through his charade. Biden will be damned if he does and damned if he doesn't, because the Democratic Party has become a self-contradicting hodgepodge of incompatible interests, just like Thomas Jefferson. Recall that LBJ thumped Goldwater in a landslide in 1964. And yet his administration became such a complete disaster that he did not even seek his party's nomination in 1968. It seems to me quite likely that Biden will be an even worse president than LBJ, and no amount of media spin will be able to save him from complete disgrace. Selah.
Well, yeah. It's the level of incompetence that is coming into office is pretty staggering.
It is.
You know, there's the Napoleon line about never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake.
Yeah.
And there's going to be plenty of opportunity, I think, in order to do that. The only thing we really need to be prepared for is being able to deal with damage at the personal and local levels until we can get the things turned around. What bothers me is the prospect of people being impatient, and like I said, Buchanan's second term. But a lot of this has to do with people's ruined expectations. You know, this, Stacey had that post about the destructive meaning of equality, and a lot of it has to do with failures of the schools.
It does.
And a lot of that has to do with basically, instead of teaching, kids, science and logic and arithmetic and reading skills and that sort of stuff, and the history of our country and the history of our civilization, they've been basically taught a bunch of crap.
Yep. Shall I read?
Go ahead.
All right. Comrade de Blasio last week declared, "I'd like to say very bluntly, our mission is to redistribute wealth. A lot of people bristle at that phrase. That is, in fact, the phrase we need to use." The subject, believe it or not, was K-12 schools in New York City. How could anyone view public education as having a mission to redistribute wealth? And yet this is indeed what de Blasio considers the mission of his city's schools. In a remarkable press conference, and by remarkable, of course, I mean insane, the mayor spoke of his plan to more equitably redistribute resources in the city's schools. "We can never accept a broken status quo. We can never go back to a past that didn't work." I have an asterisk on that. What is so broken in the status quo of New York schools? What was it about those schools that didn't work in the past? Well, the outcomes were unequal. And because inequality is unfair, according to progressives like de Blasio, therefore the entire system must be destroyed. The idea is summarized in a headline: de Blasio to destroy New York's top public schools to run an experiment in diversity. You see that vague goals like equality and diversity are really just a pretext for destruction as part of a war against achievement.
Absolutely. I mean, people like me who are 5'8" obviously should have the same place on the basketball team as those guys who are 6'6".
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, that will provide diversity of height, probably of skin tone as well, but yeah.
No, I'm just, it's just, you know, there's a reason that the guys who are 7'2" wear goggles. They do it to protect their eyes from the guys who are shorter because their fingers are likely to hit their eyes. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that you'd even qualify be endangering them for that, would you?
Well, it's I'll be 73 on New Year's Eve. I don't jump so well anymore.
Okay. Well, the thought of 5'3" me running around trying to play against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, even as old as he is, makes me kind of go.
Well, he's actually ridiculous. I think he's a year younger than me.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because when I was a freshman, Vanderbilt went out and played UCLA in the Invitational tournament out there, and we beat them 115-90. And the next year, they had this freshman kid named Lou Alcindor starting. So he's a year behind me in school.
Okay. Huh. Well. Sorry. Are we signing off already? Whoa, what a great evening.
Well, we haven't signed off yet, but the musicians.
Got Woogie Music.
Yes, we have. So let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
The quality can be destructive because one of the things is equal is not the same thing as concurrent.
Nope.
And you know what? 2 + 2 equals 4, not 5, not 3. The party doesn't get to determine the answer.
The party does not pick my answer. So I agree that I really do not want somebody else telling me what to think.
Well, we've gotten to the end of the hour, so I'm going to have to tell you to think that it's almost time to fade this thing up and say, we'll see you next year, Diana.
All right, see you next year. You take care, John.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Well, now they call me the breeze. I keep going down the road. Well, now they call me the breeze.
Thank you.